No, I want to turn our thoughts to the 14th chapter of Mark. The time's gone on down there, but it's what we've been listening to this morning is no doubt more valuable than what I'll have to say. So I'm very thankful for all these good reports this morning, and the way the Lord's blessing the saints, and the note of encouragement that there is in everybody's testimonies this morning. We'll begin reading with the third verse, the 14th chapter of Mark. And being in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard, very precious. And she brake the box and poured it on his head. And there were some that had indignation within themselves and said, "Why was this waste of the ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 pence and have been given to the poor." And they murmured against her. And Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why trouble ye her? She hath wrought a good work on me. For ye have the poor with you always, and whensoever ye will, ye may do them good. But me ye have not always. She hath done what she could. She has come aforehand to anoint my body to the burying. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she hath done shall be spoken of for a memorial of her." Now I want to talk a little about our relationships together, human relations. You may say, "I don't care so much about that. What I'm concerned about is my relationship with God. I'm not so much concerned about my relationship with people." But I can tell you on good grounds that you're not going to have a right and proper relationship with God till you have a right and proper relationship with the people, especially God's people. Now you heard me say that if I were the only person in the world, no one living here but me, I think I could be pretty good saved all the time. I believe I could. Well, it so happens that there are other people living here beside me, about 4 billion plus of them. Of course, I don't have contact with all those people, but I have contact with other people beside myself. But if everybody would just bow to me and nobody cross me up in any kind of way, just let me have my way all the time and nobody criticize me or find any fault with me or say anything about me, I still think I could be pretty good saved. Believe I could. Well, it so happens it isn't that way either. Everybody doesn't see everything like I see it. Sometimes people disagree with me. And sometimes they find fault with me and the way I do things and the things I say and so on, and criticize me sometimes. Well, as Brother Chandler used to tell us, he told us this many, many, many times, heaven's where we started. Now, that's where I've started, but if I ever get there, I'm going to have to learn to handle these kind of things. And with people not agreeing with me, and people criticizing me and finding fault with me and maybe doing other things that would be hurtful to me, I've got to learn to keep saved right on through all of that. But now, what I have said up to now would at least introduce the thought to us that the major portion of our problems arise out of our association with other people. And we have to learn to deal with other people. Life, because of other people, different personalities, different situations and conditions that people are in, life becomes very much a matter of giving and taking. You and I have to learn to take some things, but you know there's some folks can't take much. And some folks can't take much. But if heaven's where you started and you intend to get there, you better get a little tougher than what you are. And learn to take some more things. Now, there isn't near as much to things that affect us as we think they are. When we get affected in some way or other with something, then that thing that affected us looks big to us. It's a great big something. Maybe it wouldn't be all that big if there were someone else involved in it and we were on the outside looking in instead of on the inside looking out. It might not look that big to us. But since we're affected, things look big to us. But many times they aren't all that big. My mother told about a little boy and a little girl, a brother and sister, and they would make frequent trips over to Grandma's. And Grandma would always have some kind of goodies for them. So one day they were over there and Grandma was dishing up some kind of dessert that she had prepared, and the little boy looked on kind of wide-eyed and he says, "Grandma, is all of that for sister?" She said, "Well, no, son," says, "that's for you." And he said, "Such a little bit." You know, that's kind of the way things affect us, isn't it? When it's us involved, it's a big something. But if it's the other person, we think, "Well, my, nobody ought to get hurt in a little thing like that. Such a little bit." Jesus taught us a lesson in the 7th chapter of Matthew about a mote and a beam. He wanted to know why that we'd get disturbed about a mote in our brother's eye and not even consider the beam in our own. Well, now it's the beam in our own eye that distorts our vision and makes us think that mote's a big something in that other brother's eye. A mote's just a little speck. We'd hardly notice it at all if we weren't looking for something, but it's this beam in my eye that makes me look for something. And then I spot some little something. You always can. Everybody has their faults. You, me, and everybody else has some kind of faults. Well, you can always spot something. And my, how big they are. Well, that's because this beam in my eye has got that all distorted, got my vision distorted. He says, why? Jesus did. You know, Jesus asked some pretty difficult questions. And he never answered any of them. He just left us to find the answer to them. He never answered this one, but he said, why? Considerest thou, or why do you behold the mote that is in my brother's eye? Now, it was there. He didn't say the mote you think's there. It was there. There was some fault there, see? But why do you behold that and consider not the beam in your own eye? Well, it'd take a long time to answer that question. There's a lot of facets to it. And the answer to that question would take quite a little while. So I'm not going into that. But in connection with my thought this morning, what I want us to get here is that things look so much different to us when they're going out that way than they do when they're coming this way. And Jesus told us that with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And the thought is, put it out just like you'll be glad to see it coming back, because it's coming back. And you put it out just like you'll be glad to meet it when it comes back. Jesus taught us another lesson in the 12th chapter of Mark. He was standing over by the treasury in the temple. And the people were coming by and putting their offerings into the treasury box. Jesus standing over here to one side with his disciples and not saying anything. Pretty soon a widow woman came by and dropped in two mites. Now two mites is such a little trivial amount that if you were walking down the street and were in any kind of a hurry and you saw it lying on the sidewalk, you wouldn't stop to pick it up. An insignificant sum. But Jesus came to life right quick. He says, look, did you see that? See what that woman did? That woman's put in more than all the rest of them. I imagine I can see those apostles around him all looking with kind of wonderment. Well, Master, what school did you go to? How did you learn to figure? You surely need to go back to school and learn your figures. But Jesus figures right. We need to learn to figure that way. Jesus was figuring from the standpoint of the sacrifice involved and evaluating it that way. Not the amount of the money. That wasn't it. But he said, this woman has put in all the living that she had. These others of their abundance they've cast in. Maybe some of them will not even miss what they put in. But this woman out of her want has put in all the living that she had. 2 mites was all she had. She put that in. And he valued it on that basis. One great thing that you and I need to learn to do, God help us to do it, is to learn to live together and love one another. And appreciate one another. And respect one another and one another's feelings. It isn't the big things that count so much in life. If you would enumerate the big things that happen in life between you and other people, they'd be pretty few and far between. It isn't very often that anybody would give you $1,000, is it? That'd be strung out pretty sparsely along. People that'd give you $1,000, well, you might appreciate it if somebody gave you $1,000. But more often, people may give you $1. But we need to learn to appreciate people for their purposes and their intentions. Their expressions of love. And their interest in our welfare. Maybe the tokens are small. But if you and I will learn to appreciate small tokens, we'll learn to love and appreciate one another more. And we'll feel closer together. There is nothing quite so intolerant of imperfection. How many in here think that you're perfect? Would anybody raise your hand on that? Not a hand up. Well, there are some imperfections about us all then, aren't they? We need to learn to tolerate one another and the imperfections and faults of one another and appreciate one another for our earnest intent and for our purposes. If anything happens as a trial to you, try to look beyond that and see what purpose that person had in mind. How were they motivated? But as I started to say, there is nothing quite so intolerant of imperfection as imperfection itself. That's the reason why we have so much problems one with another is our imperfections. And imperfection just plain cannot tolerate imperfection. Jesus was absolute perfection. There was no fault in him. Even Pilate couldn't find any. He was perfection itself. But look how tolerant and forbearing he is with us. Get a sample of his tolerance and forbearance in his dealings with his apostles. They were very imperfect men. at the time of his association with them, they were more imperfect than they were later on. They grew up a lot when the Holy Spirit came. But they didn't have the Holy Spirit in the time of his association with them. And they were very imperfect men. One time, two of them got ambitious, and they went to him and brought their mother along, played a little politics, and brought their mother along to plead their cause. And she presented their petition. She wanted one of her sons to sit on his right hand and the other on his left when he come in his kingdom. That's pretty ambitious, isn't it? Well, Jesus could have said, I can't use fellows like you. I'll just have to dismiss you and get me some more. Take your place. But no, he didn't say that. These turned out to be two of the principal ones of the apostles, James and John. Peter was the other one of the trio that was constantly with Jesus and went into everything with him that he did, Peter, James, and John. Well, this was James and John that did this. But Jesus looked right on past how things sounded and how things looked and saw down in those men's hearts something that he could use, and if he could just bring it out and develop it, he could make foundation stones in the church of God out of them. And that's what he did. But take to note now, when they came with their petition, all the rest of them were moved with indignation toward them. They got indignant about a thing like that, but why did they? Did you ever analyze this little thing? And see why they did? Well, I think I can tell you why they did. They had the same thing in their minds. And to prove it, on another occasion when they were going along, all of them going along with Jesus to some place, they got in a big argument among themselves about who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Wouldn't that prove it? They had the same things in their mind. They were indignant because these boys are beating us to it. We want to get our bid in here too. And these two fellows are getting in ahead of us. And they became indignant. Well, Jesus could have said, "My, look what a bunch of yeggs I got on my hands now. The whole bunch of them arguing about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. My, I can't use a bunch of fellows like this. I'll have to throw the whole bunch overboard and start over again." But no, he looked deeper than that. He looked on past that. He looked down into those men's hearts and saw things that if he could just bring it out and develop it, they'd make good foundation stones in the church of God. And he made foundation stones out of every one of them. Tolerance. Forbearing. If we could understand one another better, we would love one another more. My mother had a piece among her things. I never did find it after she was gone. But I heard her read it different times. I don't remember just how it all went, but it wound up, I remember that. It says, We would love our brother better if we knew our brother more. Or we'd love him more if we knew him better, or some one of those. If we could just know one another better and understand one another better, instead of getting our feelings hurt and getting all miffed, we ought to seek to understand one another. What makes one another tick? The more imperfect we are, and I guess we would have to recognize that some have more faults and bigger faults than others do, but the more imperfect we are, the more exacting we will be. That's right. Whether we recognize it or not, that's the truth. It's the imperfections in us that make us exacting one with another. I don't know where we get our grounds for some attitudes that some people have. I told Evelyn and Uncle Ira Stover, I mentioned this to different ones. I read Corrie Ten Boom's books, and how through the grace of God she was able to forgive those guards that tortured and tormented she and her sister. And her sister was a little frailer than she was and couldn't endure it and died there in the prison where all this went on. Died under the hands of her tormentors. Corrie survived it. But by the grace of God, she forgave all of them. I read Charles Colson's book. Now he found the Lord and the bitter enemies that he had in the political circles where he revolved, and Arthur Burns was one of them. Arthur Burns was the head of the Federal Reserve Board for a long while. He made a trip to where Arthur Burns was, went to his apartment, and in humility and tears, he asked Arthur Burns' forgiveness for everything, and Arthur Burns came to tears too. Put his arms around him and freely forgave him. He said, when I left, Arthur Burns walked with me to the elevator with his arm around me. And John Dean was another one of his bitter enemies. But John Dean wound up in the same prison where Charles Colson was over the Watergate deal. Charles Colson went to him when he learned he was there and told him, he says, now I've been here longer than you have. I've learned a few things since I've been here. Any way I can help you out now while you're here, I'll be glad to do it. I said, these people, we say they don't know about God. Well, I think maybe some folks know more about God than what we think they do. But we say they don't have light. Well, they maybe don't have the light that we have. But their contact with God, be it much or little, caused them to forgive one another. And to feel the need of forgiving one another and straightening up the things that they had done to create this enmity. And I said, what makes me wonder now is to read about these people that didn't have light that we have, and how they forgave one another. And we have folks right among us just seem like they hardly can ever forgive one another for the things that happened between them. I don't know. That makes me wonder. I wonder if we maybe can feel that the amount of light and knowledge that we have about God and God's ways justifies us in holding our feelings one toward another. Well, somebody said no, and I saw another one shaking his head, and I'll shake my head too. I don't believe that. But it is a hard little riddle to solve. Now, if we are hurt, something happens to hurt us now. Somebody did this to me. That thing that hurt me is all I can see about that fella. He did this to me. And that hurt me. And that's all I can see about him. And that's bad. So he's a bad fella. And maybe actually that's about the only bad thing he did. That thing that I got hurt about. Beyond that, there would be many good things. The time's going around there, and I'm going to break right at this point, because sometime or other I want to say more about this particular phase of our association and dealings one with another. Amen.